The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now, despite Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell vowing never to back Donald Trump again, it seems there is still huge support for the former president of the United States in the conservative end of the Republican Party, which, of course, is most of it. House Minority Whip Steve Scalise became the second GOP leader to meet with Trump following House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's trip to Florida late last month to meet with the former president to discuss future campaign plans. So will Donald Trump be able to plot a successful political comeback for 2024? U.S. public policy expert, contributor to The Spectator, Matt Mayer is on the line. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
I'm very well. I was looking at some polling. Morning Consult was the poll I was looking at, and in the Republican Party, it seems that 50% of the members of the Republican Party want Trump to play a major role in that party going forward. 15% say a minor role going forward, and 25% say no, they don't want him to play a role. But it shows the dilemma facing the Republican Party with those kind of numbers.
It's not really a dilemma. I mean, I think, you know, he still has very high approval rating among most Republicans. I think what that poll is showing is people want him involved, but they don't want him to necessarily run, even though, and I think that same Morning Consult poll among 2024 candidates, he was at like 53%, and the next closest was 12. So he still has very strong support. But, you know, I think the sentiment is, you know, hopefully he'll be involved, but hopefully he won't run, and we'll go get behind somebody who can take back the White House.
Looking at that poll, I think Mike Pence was in second place at 12%, and then the others down the field. So where is that candidate that will bring Trumpism back to the White House without Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are two candidates that are very strong right now. And one is the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, and then the other would be former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And, you know, what you're going to see is, until Trump tells people what he's going to do in 2024, he'll continue to kind of take all the oxygen out of the room. But once he says he won't be running, then I think you'll see other folks rise, because Republicans will then kind of go to the next on the ballot, which will see who can rise up. I think Mike Pence probably is not going to get much above 12%, simply because I think a lot of the base view him as somebody who did not watch the president's back when they wanted him to. I don't think that's fair, but I think that's what they see.
Has Ted Cruz shot himself in the foot completely, or will his little trip to Cancun fade in the memory?
No, I think he's done some permanent damage to himself by what was just a politically stupid and this insensitive decision to do the Cancun trip. And I think how he's handled it afterwards has kind of made it even worse. So, you know, I think, you know, Ted Cruz has his backers, but I don't think he's going to be viewed as somebody who's going to rise above the field come 2024.
Now, the events of January the 6th on Capitol Hill will certainly go down in the history books, however it's described as an insurrection or incited by Trump, whatever the history books finally write about it. But it does seem to have dismayed some what you'd call moderate Republican voters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, for all of 2020, you know, people watched the left, Antifa and BLM do the kind of stuff that happened on the 6th and condemned it. And then when it happened on the 6th by folks on the right, I think it shocked a lot of people on the right. They were disappointed by that by what occurred. And so, yeah, I mean, I think they're now standing back saying, wow. What we'll see is, does that recede in time in terms of the importance that the people on the right view it as they look around and say, OK, how do we take the House and the Senate and the presidency and put this all behind us?
That's the dilemma then, because obviously the messages that Donald Trump was promoting in terms of the people who felt politically disenfranchised and then who embraced Trump's Republican Party. Trump himself may be a negative for the other people that you'd need if you're to take back the House, the Senate and the White House. So it's to try and exploit the message, but get rid of the messenger.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about the policies, not the personality. The personality is what turned off, let's call it, suburban American households. And so those folks are who the Republicans will need to take back the House, Senate, and presidency. But I think, look, Joe Biden's off to a good start in pushing those people back to the Republican Party by some of his policies. So I think it'll be a pretty interesting fight come 2022 mm-hmm. over the House and Senate.
What are the moves that are being made by Biden that are pushing people back, particularly those people? You know, we're talking about the people who felt politically disenfranchised, but most of them are going to get that big check that, you know, some Republicans wanted and now don't want, and which Biden embraced in the campaign when Donald Trump, in fact, coincidentally, also wanted the big payout to individuals.
Yeah, actually, I don't think many of those suburban voters are going to get much of a check at all. It's really going to go toward the kind of more urban poor and rural poor. You know, I think when you look at what he did on XL pipeline by canceling that without any consultation to governors, without consulting with Canada, putting a bunch of pipeline workers out of work almost immediately, and then all the people related to those businesses. I think if you look what he's doing on immigration, you know, when you have a Democrat representative in Texas saying, "Whoa, stop, Biden! You're creating a crisis at the border," and Hispanic Americans don't support Biden's immigration push because they know this influx of immigrants are going to essentially undermine the labor market for them as first generation Americans. So those are the types of things that early on the record number of executive orders that he's put in place. Many of those really progressive policies. He's not looking like a uniter. Doesn't appear he's trying to be much of a uniter. And so that's going to create some angst and pause in that suburban voting bloc that is going to be up for grabs come 2022.
And does nobody raise fundamental questions, though, about some of the values of the Republican Party? And, you know, when we look at Texas and what happened in the weather crisis, and it was very, very severe. But the idea that Republican Texas basically wants pretty much no involvement with the federal government in terms of electricity generation and distribution. And then they were caught short. They couldn't deliver the goods in the crisis. And not alone that, they started to screw their customers with massive price hikes. I mean, I could not believe that people for a couple of days' electricity might be charged $1,000. I mean, this is crazy stuff.
Yes.
I mean, that would bring about a French Revolution were it to be France.
Yeah, so those bills aren't going to get paid, as you know. They're going to take care of that issue. But yeah, Texas has always been independent of the rest of the U.S. national energy grid. And it's worked fairly well for Texas, except you have a 100-year storm like this happens. They didn't do both on the solar, wind, and then also the pipeline. They didn't do the weatherization stuff that they should have been doing. And so they got hit, and now they're trying to recover from that. But look, you know, California's on the national energy grid, and it had blackouts for months on end because of their policy. So, you know, I think it's the initial shock of it. But again, I think that'll get taken care of by the Texas legislature and the governor, and they'll get that all fixed out. But yeah, some of those bills were just wild to see that they were going to try to charge consumers because of the price hikes.
Yeah, because their bills are actually linked to the market, which, you know, is not really the way it works in most places. You do get price hikes. You occasionally get price reductions, but it doesn't sway so widely that if you have a storm, the price goes up. It's baffling that this should happen. It's kind of capitalism gone to the nth degree. So in terms of what's happened in Texas, Biden declares an emergency, therefore federal aid comes in. But I saw one of the Texas representatives saying that the money that comes in from the federal government is going to be given to people to pay their electricity bills, the outlandish electricity bills. I mean, that would be crazy that the American taxpayers actually pay electricity companies who didn't do their job.
Yeah, I don't think that'll end up happening, Pat. I think there'll be enough outrage to say to the energy companies, you're going to have to eat this one, because, you know, to your point, what occurred, right, is in the good times, the energy companies kind of brought in all that cash and then didn't do the weatherization kind of stuff, right? So I don't think anyone's going to say, yeah, let's use taxpayer dollars to subsidize the companies that failed to do the winterization work. And as a result, they're going to then benefit from a crisis. I don't think that's going to fly. That'll get taken care of quickly.
Yeah. In any event, that what is said to be a 100-year storm may, as we've discovered in Europe, become a more frequent event than once in 100 years. We've had some storms that were predicted to be so, and then you get another one 3 years on. So that's perhaps what Texas might be facing into. Now, Matt, you want to talk about Rush Limbaugh, who passed away and who was honoured with the highest civilian honour by Donald Trump. Explain why he is, in historical terms now and in the future, as people look back on the era from Reagan onwards, why he will be seen as an important figure.
Yeah, so, you know, Rush Limbaugh really is the person who carried the conservative torch in America from the end of the Reagan presidency to Donald Trump, and got through the Clinton years and the Bush disappointment years and then the Obama years. And, you know, he was syndicated on 650 radio stations across America, millions and millions of listeners every single day for 30 plus years. He really showed that that conservative ideas are commercially viable, meaning, you know, you could go on radio, spend 3 hours a day and people will listen and tune in and broadcasters could make money. You know, he essentially led the way for Fox News, which, as you know, has become kind of the go-to news station on the right. So he really changed the dynamic in America for the conservative movement by making it commercially viable, popular, and taught conservatives how to fight back against the left. So it really, he's going to, history will be kind to him in terms of judging his role in kind of the resurgence of the American right.
His rise, I suppose, was facilitated by the FCC changing the rules whereby broadcasters had to be, on the one hand, on the other hand, they had to be, attempt at any rate, to be impartial. But the FCC changed the rules, and so he was able to say what he liked, you know, whether it was true or false. But people might argue that he coarsened public discourse.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, when Reagan got rid of the Fairness Doctrine, which is what you're talking about, in 1987, it allowed so they didn't have to have, like, you know, if you had somebody on the right, you had to have somebody on the left to kind of create, quote, balance. Right. And so, yeah, he certainly, by his rise, there are times his language was bombastic and over the top. But, you know, he saw himself as entertainer. So that doesn't surprise me. It's just like the opinion shows on MSNBC, CNN, or Fox News that aren't the news shows, but the opinion ones. You know, they say and do stuff just to kind of attract their viewers and their base and get attention. And, you know, that's fine. The higher their numbers, the more advertising dollars they make. Right. But, you know, the coarsening of America kind of really has been a multi-party effort for many, many decades now, that lots of folks on the right and left are kind of guilty of contributing to in a large manner.
On that note, U.S. public policy expert, contributor to The Spectator, Matt Mayer, thank you very much for joining us.